Good evening, Collins Port. This is Daryl War, and that song is one I've been saving for a long time and listening to keep my spirits boosted. Oh yes, much of this type of material are in it to unravel a few characters or make their lives worse with a lovely curtain fall. Well, I said I wanted to see behind that curtain in my first intro, and whoa, did I get to see what was behind that curtain? I think I understand now why I started writing Margaret Chaussette Dupré and 200 years. After getting to know who believed in Barnabas Collins and Chaussette Dupré reaching each other through a third incarnation as Maggie Evans, I have discovered what a perilous road it's been for you all since before I was born. And here I was in it to solve it for everyone after getting fed up with what happened to Sam Evans, among other things. As you know, I went into this listening to the characters and to their wants and desires. So Barnabas Collins? Oh, my Chaussette was so tragically taken. Oh, allow me to take a brief aside and tell you some things that might not be so accurate, as my past is fragmented after 170-plus years in a coffin. But let me... And he steps about, telling his tale as though he is about to burst into song. Then we get to the 1795 storyline and find out the details of what went on. But when Victoria Winters gets back, he's still at it. And I just thought, okay, sheesh. Or, as I said in my pairings analysis, they want to hear him stop complaining, and I am no exception. Well, I tapped into the needs of those two, and thusly my writer's block had been gone. My anhedonia had been lifted from becoming all these scary people. And lastly, my marital problems of longer than I'd been married tapered to a palpitating point and vanished. Which could be another sign. I mean, that would make me far more loyal to this relationship than a Klingon is to his sense of honor. My God. Still, those Barnabas fans of other pairings are very vocal, and some oddly react threatened when they see the photos of that couple's chemistry. And it makes me wonder, is this Julia-Barnabas coupling actually the most popular? Or is it their fans are simply more vocal? And I wonder. I don't know it. I just wonder. I mean, think about it. Local or statewide elections, for example. Who has the most say? The people who vote and speak up. Especially when you consider the money involved in some of these elections. But does that mean it's a majority rule? Yep. So, of course, I was already ticked off as Groucho Marx would be at his audience sitting there showing him blankness, while inside they were laughing so hard as to wet themselves, at least according to the woman who apologized to me. And she mentioned it, well, you know, I think she was bedridden, she had a lot of problems, and confessed that to me, and then just said, claimed herself to be a drive-by reader, which, to me, saying that casually, just the word drive-by, I'm like, that doesn't make it any better. When she told me that, I was very quick to just say, okay, you know, I understand. And anyone else who's terrified, or nervous or shy, I don't want anyone to feel guilty. I never have. I just went into Miss Manners Unbound, just thinking, there is an etiquette problem here. You know, when somebody makes you laugh, you let them know. I mean, how could you not? And it just took me so much unraveling to figure out what the problem was. And it also might have to do with the pairings that, you know, I was just listening to the characters, and then you have people who prefer these pairings, but they've been moved over with all this other bullying from these other people. And so you get unvocal, you just get so nervous, and I'm just like, oh man, I've been through so many fandoms. This one takes the cake. I'm like, we do not have these issues in the Star Trek world, I don't think. Or the Sailor Moon world, when was back doing that stuff. I mean, we were very talkative with each other, you know, back in the 90s and the chat rooms. And, hey, you know, you got to check my stuff out, check your stuff out. I'm printing it out. This is what I think. You know, we're all very group oriented. And then this fanfiction.net thing comes up, and I missed a lot of the horrible stuff that happened. And then all of a sudden, nobody's talking. Oh, except the Addams Family people. They still talk to each other. And that show is just as old. Just... Oh my gosh. And it has newer incarnations too, but they're all, for some reason, they're all in one spot. So that might be part of it, but my numbers for the Addams Family, you know, the reviews that say, hey, I like this, there are more and they were quicker, but the percentage hasn't even reached 50% of what I had for the DS crowd. You know, I don't give away numbers, but I'm telling you, it's amazing. Those Addams Family fans, they speak up. So, the silence comedians, we don't like that, you know, and I've been telling you, writer, actor, comedian, they're a war. That's how it's turned out, and comedians just don't like that when they're not getting the feedback. It's just, you know, you're cracking jokes and you're just hearing nothing, and yeah, it's going to make you go crazy. Then I'd already had the history of bullying in the extreme, but mostly verbal and psychological. And from many sides, you know, family, friends, peers, institutions, and meaning schools and that kind of thing. Then, after having that back history, I do the research on this Julia Barnabas phenomenon, as well as a bit in the Angelique Barnabas phenomenon, and see some nasty things, particularly at Barnabas Collins. I mean, they are so mad at him for not reciprocating, and it's like, okay, is this where the threat of my work is coming from? You know, when I'm saying people have this knee-jerk reaction and they get threatened by it. Is this why people who empathize with his love and his insecurities haven't spoken up so much? You know, because we have them. And we're a little more aware that we have them. Well, that being the bloody case, you can bet with my back history, I wasn't going to stand for that. Mm-mm. Not after all that couple gave me, nor after finding out about all the snappishness in the fandom. Uh-uh. I've had fans of my work approach me in awe, relief, and downright boiled affirmation that they're behind me all the way. Sweet. And I just think it's backlog, you know, 40 years waiting for this. And I just listened. But I still love one lady who reviewed Margaret Josette Dupre, the Whom of Many chapter, you know, the one where I said, okay, I think there's something sinister going on in this fandom. And she said to the effect, there probably ought to be Barnaby, you know, multiple, one for each chick. And I'm thinking, yeah, like that split for the 10th Doctor, for Rose, his assistant Rose, the hot one, I can't remember, David Tennant. And he only had one heart, so I was, good idea, you know, Rose gets the Doctor after all, good move. And with fanfiction, that's why I was so flabbergasted as to what was going on. You'd think there would be an even split. It's just silly. And what I saw through 2007 to 2011, when I was combing everything, just looking for my own relief and not finding it, of what's written for the guy just does not tap into his sense of romance, the depth of his tenderness about Josette, nor about Sarah. It's like, it's just swept under the rug, so he can be a jester and an object, and I'm thinking, dang, if all these writers treat him like that, why on earth is he a trophy at all? You know, it's like, yeah, he's just a big lame-o, we're gonna treat him whenever. And I'm like, why do you even want him if you think he's a piece of garbage? Weirdest fandom ever. I have been in a lot of fandoms in my time. But this one has got to be the weirdest I have ever encountered. So if there is a providential force pushing me, then that was likely the reason an end result goal novel came out of me. And what's nice is I'm told I've made the experience very real for those in touch with this couple. Good. I mean, it sure was real for me and all of my channeling. And I think it makes sense because a lot of the enjoyers of it feel for the couple, and they are fairly in love with Barnabas Collins in that altruistic way. But what is fascinating is I and the two other ladies who saw the triple reincarnation, none of us are in love with him. We just understood and understand, and I think that's why we saw it as the obvious path. We didn't make choices. We cared, and we listened. So that is a marvelous blend, and I still wonder. Josette? Kitty? Maggie? Why is it there are three of us? Spooky. So, three retractions I need to make. Number one, my husband and I were in somewhat of a hurry to get the workshop to the intro to episode 12 done, and the terms of left and right hemispheres of the brain is outdated and outmoded, so I apologize for that, because what I meant to get through to you all is getting those hemispheres to work in tandem. This is to help the health as well as the better functioning of your brain and your faculties. Just put it into balance, that kind of thing. So the tools I mentioned, Bananagrams, a multi-matrix game, or just using cards with the left hand, right hand, doing solitaire, are still very much accurate. And I know this not through any book reading, but from personal experience working with patients in therapy and doing it myself. It just gets your whole being in better flux and balance, like many exercises do. That's my first retraction. Second retraction, the information I got from one Josette reincarnation studier, yes, Maggie had nightmares of being locked in a coffin, but it wasn't before Barnabas showed up on the program. It was before he ever attacked her. She had told me subconsciously she knew she was Josette. So the nightmares are there, but triggered by Barnabas, according to that evidence. And as for me, I saw Maggie being a victim of night terrors since she was very young, or when she was very young. There were the signs of having flashbacks there. And she confesses in the program there is no reason in the world she should be frightened of Barnabas Collins when she first meets him. So there is that. It's number two. Number three, retraction. Not really a retraction, but a better explanation of what's up in the comment boxes on Podomatic. The poll tab in the lower right corner is good. Just to see what the heck you're doing and typing, and we were in such a rush to get that last intro done. I didn't get that across. Obviously, to write that kind of thing, you want to see what you're writing and look it over at least once. At least some people do before you press comment. And I know sometimes it doesn't go through. I had one great commenter for episode 1 and 2 recently. She did her comments for number 2 twice because she didn't see it going through. And that's fine, because when I go in and moderate the comments, I can see that if they're done twice, and I'm not going to double post them, you know, I'll just do the one, you know, and I look for anything missing, if there's any errors, that if you maybe came in and did it twice, I'll just get rid of the one that has any kind of spelling errors that maybe you were like, no, I want to do it again. So with the poll tab, that's what I meant to, it just so you could see it, you know, not to say a ton, because like I said, just one thing that made you laugh, if that's all you can do. And I've noticed that with comment boxes all over the web, fanfiction.net, on blogs, they have this lower right pull tab to extend the box larger. So, those are the retractions. Now we're going to get to the workshop with Daryl's husband. New microphone, but I'm not going to use this one for the actual redo of episode 13, because that was using the original mic, and so the microphone that is similar to it, it's like the same company, I'm going to use that one, because I already got at least half of Willie down, so I don't have to totally become him completely for 13.
It's a similar microphone, so the sound would
be closer than this. Yeah, and the noise reduction is the same. This one is a lot more sensitive to breath, though, so I don't know. I'm going to have to practice with it. And I wanted to get a Y-splitter for us to be able to do this, maybe use two headsets, but I couldn't find it. So anyway, the workshop, part one of what the workshop is that I was told that, oh, you know, your intros make people feel guilty, and I'm thinking, yeah, that's not my intention, and when you would listen to them, you would say, yeah, I'm not getting that, you know, I don't get that. But because of how people are kind of programmed from when they're quite little with various environmental factors that create a sense of guilt, you know, either parental or religious or that kind of thing. I want to go back to when I was staying at your dormitory
when you were in college.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew that there was a problem with that, with the way we were both raised and how a lot of people are raised, and I want you to go back and tell me what you had figured out to help me with those issues, too. My memory is we were both coming to terms with a lot of things that we had gone through in our childhood. It wasn't helpful to us.
Are you talking about the guilt thing?
The guilt thing, yeah.
Yeah, so basically this stemmed from a friend of mine I knew in high school who would basically do weird stuff and then feel bad about it. Sometimes weird stuff, sometimes normal stuff, but whatever. He'd do stuff, he'd feel bad about it, he'd talk about how it was wrong, then he'd do it again, over and over and over. And it was like, dude, if you're doing something that makes you feel guilty, either stop doing it or stop feeling guilty about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just as simple as that. And I don't mean that as an endorsement of becoming a sociopath.
Yeah, don't go doing stuff bad just because you don't feel guilty no more.
But yeah, it was just that mindset. And we both grew up with guilt issues.
Right. Yeah. And it was really good advice when you told me that. I mean, it really was what I needed to hear. And right around that time, when we were first friends, I think before we were dating, even. You've been such a good friend to me through everything. Just amazing.
Thank you.
That's when I knew. Various background histories, you know, and what you had was so solid, what you grew up with. Although we did understand the same problems with being what human beings are, quite emotional. So the other part of the workshop that I wanted to go into is that game that we played. Now, I feel strongly that people do not know how to give constructive praise because, like I said in my first intro, all the advertising. I said something like, this spectacular movie you must go and see, because everybody wants to make a dollar or 6 million of them. And I just was like, okay, that's one of the problems that we can't boost each other's spirits, because here we have all these advertisers either trying to get us interested in what we are interested in or trying to rip us off. So they have come up with all these blurbs and all this stuff. So the idea of constructive praise or saying something nice about somebody is a turnoff. It's a big turnoff. And that's like, hey, power to the people, y'all. Let's start boosting our enthusiasm about each other and start celebrating our differences as well as our strengths. And let the advertisers be damned. You know, it's not like they're out to get us. They have a job to do. But we could very easily encourage a great amount of creativity and talent by showing each other how to boost what our strengths are. Now, remember that game that I think we came up when we first moved here? Or at least I started it, I think. The alphabet game. Do you remember that? It was a lot of fun.
I'm not sure.
We were in the kitchen, and I said, let's try to do some positive thinking and come up with words through the alphabet. And I think what we did was I would do a letter from the alphabet and you would do a letter, or we would try to kind of come up with it as a type of teamwork. And so, you know, you start A with amazing, B for beautiful,
okay,
C,
so
positive words.
It was like together. We were just trying to go through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do remember that, but I don't remember it being quote-unquote the alphabet game. But
yeah, I think that's what I called it later, and C, what would C be, maybe? Captivating.
I was going to say clever.
Clever. D. I don't know why I'm coming up with diaphanous, I mean, but that's pretty descriptive. I mean, you could also do descriptive things, which is helpful too, because, you know, some people are not necessarily pretty or beautiful. One time I was told that I was striking, which I appreciated because it was more well-defined as to the way that I look, which, by the way, some of you have seen my picture. There is a lot going on in my face. I mean, it's just a enormous amount of information, because there's just so much just going on with me, and I think it shows in my face. So when I heard striking, that was helpful to me, and hopefully when I've said the photos of a lot of these Josette Barnabas or Maggie Barnabas fans, or Josette equals Kitty equals Maggie fans, that there is a lot of humanitarian nature, and certain kindnesses that come out when I do see the faces. Just being able to describe highlights, good things, positive things. Real tough in this fandom, I'm sure, because everybody's just like, and they're so used to complaining.
It's somewhat... Sorry.
Go ahead. No, please.
To me, I have difficulty with compliments, because the way my mind works, it's so much easier to know why I don't like something than it is to know why I do like something. Like, something's enjoyable. It's like, oh, what'd you like about it? It was good. I don't know. I liked it. And then, if something's almost there, but something about it bugs me, I know what about it bugs me. I guess, on the upside, if something is truly awful, it would be easier to come up with what I did like about it than what I didn't like about it.
Yeah.
But, I don't know.
Yeah, but I also think it's conditioning. You know, we have so many people who are just critics, and it's so much easier to just take something apart analytically than to tell why we like it analytically, or even heartfelt. Because we, one, have lost the conversational dialogue through various device technologies and all these games and just all these clicks and all these... Like, we've gotten conditioned to the video game system where you just kind of click, 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 press button, and not put your lips of what you're saying to your fingers. And the other thing that I really wanted to point out is it's easier to talk about someone's better qualities conversationally to a third person than to the person who is giving you that directly. I don't know why. I have not been that way. I'm able to talk to other people about what I like about you or something funny you said, you know, while you're there. And also when you're not there. So it's almost like we're looking for, what are you saying behind my back that's good? Let me know that. Let me know what you're saying behind my back that's good. Because usually the idea of talking behind somebody's back is you're saying something bad. But that was another thing that I wanted to put into this workshop about, hey, if you like my material and you're telling a friend about it, tell me. Oh, especially if they're not interested. Like, and honestly, like if somebody has been bugging you, this bit of Ultimate Dark Shadows is the best thing ever. Come to me, tell me who's bugging you, and I'll tell them to stop. Because we should just like what we like, and that's my main issue. And also, I tend to do the same thing to other people. I think that's why it's weird to me that other people can't do it with me, because I can tell people, I like this about you.
Oh.
Yes.
I think the compliments when the person's not there may be more frequent, because the subject of the person came up.
Right.
Well, when you're there with the person, to me, usually the subject of that person doesn't come up, because you're there interacting, not analyzing your interaction.
Right.
If that makes sense.
But yeah, oh, it does. Yeah.
I don't know if that's really a reason, but it's just off the top of my head might be a partial explanation.
Yeah, that would make sense. So it's a good workshop so far. And the other thing that I noticed with the device technology, and when I got my Kindle, I was like, I am not getting this Kindle Fire without a Bluetooth keyboard. And it was funny because if some of you have seen those seaside pictures when I went to go distribute postcards, it was funny because I was on this bus with Wi-Fi, and I was learning how to use this keyboard, and I asked the people through either Kindle or some other organization to help me out, like, trying to get the Bluetooth set up, and, you know, you see them on video, and they don't see you, and I was just telling them, well, thank you so much, you know, you really helped me, and they're just like, oh, you know, because I'm very complimentary, and not in a dishonest way where I'm just trying to boost you, it's more like I'm just being honest, you know, I like to talk about what I like. It comes naturally to me. I am not sure why. Maybe it's just because I've been so abused and heard so many horrible things about me. And I was just like, no, that's... In fact, another thing that I do is when somebody's getting on my nerves, I go, well, how do I change this frown into a smile and turn it upside down? Oh, I'll think of these people who have been nice to me and I'll go tell them. You know, that's one of the ways that I deal with it. But anyway, I highly recommend, if you have a device that can get in touch with a Bluetooth keyboard, they usually soak up AAA batteries. I hate the fact that AAA batteries are the norm now, because they're so bloody expensive.
Well, they don't have as much juice as a AA.
I know!
Make it just a little bit larger and accept AA's!
Well, yeah, and that's one of the things Rich was talking about, man. D's are the way to go, or if you can't get that, get C batteries. The bigger ones obviously have more juice. But yeah, it's all about the AAA these days, which is annoying. And it was funny because I had the Bluetooth keyboard and I was on that bus and I was writing to Helena saying, I'm on my way to go deliver postcards. And I think I wrote to Oshin too. And it was just the weirdest thing. And I could not fathom for the life of me, how can we have these amazing tools that do so much for us and not be grateful? I mean, it was just absolutely amazing to be on this bus going to the seaside to deliver postcards. and being able to write to these other DS creators. I mean, I just... most of the time, I was putting stamps on and putting little stickers on and listening to one song over and over again. So the Bluetooth keyboard, I highly recommend. You got to find one if you want to on Amazon. And in another workshop, we talked about the ability to type again, because I think a lot of people have gotten used to the cell phone, you know, and you're just using one finger or your little finger or whatever. So I also wanted to get to the reviews, because I don't know if we've seen them all. Pat just said some amazing things. He was exactly what I was looking for in terms of how to put down commentary for the radio drama. And for episode 6, I listened to it 5 times over the last few weeks. Actually, this might be 7. Yeah, you know what? I think it is. Then he said he'd wake up to "Hey Little Devil" by Neil Sedaka playing. That was really cool. And then he liked the song, you know, and I just felt it was fitting. But, you know, my music range is so high. Then I tried to listen while mowing the grass and got interrupted by a neighbor, and my iPod got changed somehow and lost it. And I love that he was talking about what happened while he was trying to listen, and then he was trying to mow his lawn. And there have been times where I'm just like, hey, if this helps you get to sleep, you know, I'm happy with that news too. Then my iPod died next time and I had to charge it. Finally, I came and listened and followed the script. I do hate leaving unholy tips to bad waitresses, because that's what Simon Milligan talks about. My unholy tip. Maggie does the same thing. My unholy tip. Are you going to give me my unholy tip? I didn't really hate the London Bridges song while watching the show because you knew Sarah was coming out, but did you notice I don't recall hearing it in 1795 episodes? And a lot of people on Diaz fan pages have talked about that. Sam is a past ghost. Love the twists and turns. Andre Dupre, well, you could say that about everyone. They all played someone different except Barnabas. And I asked him about, hey, when you hear my Lurch impression for episode 7, I'm really curious because it scared me when I got it augmented and changed. And I double up the sound and change the pitch. And so it was a very good attempt. Needs a little work. And he puts in a raspberry. The playful Carolyn and Tony almost getting X-rated if there was video. And peeping Toms getting busted, giggling like teenagers. Then the whole Blair scene. Yeah, treating Blair like dirt. Love it. Thought the date in the Blue Whale was a little slow. Well, it was supposed to be, but... it was like a quiet moment, but I was happy when he told me that because it was like what I was shooting for. Willie needs penmanship. That was funny. The end line was a good cliffhanger type ending. I guess on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd give it an 8. And that's not bad. You know, that's above average. He also says, didn't seem like there were too many different storylines to follow for episode 8. Love the plots and different shows interacting. This one was like a real episode of Dark Shadows with only a few characters in each one. Enjoyed the Peter and Victoria scene of them describing what the Addams Family were doing. Brought back memories of that show. And that was cool. Blair finding Angelique was cute with the bickering. Look forward to more of her. And will you use her music from the show? I always liked the spooky mood and something bad was going to happen feel of it. I really like listening and following the script here. I follow the characters and the voices better. If I don't mention all the scenes, it doesn't mean I didn't enjoy them. I just don't feel a need to be a critic of everything. I do love it all. I feel a binge listen coming on. And yeah, I wasn't looking for critiquing so much as just a dialogue, you know? Like, what are you enjoying? Like, curiosity of a comedian or of a creator. And it was right there, so that's good. And I did response reviews. But, I mean, he did a lot of reviews, and I'm really grateful because just it's the dialogue that I want. But the Addams Family, like I say again, they're more talkative. And I got some reviews, one from an Addams Family writer, and he says, I really like this story. You can tell you put a lot of effort and time into it. I enjoyed reading it so far, but I can't really see how the Addams Family is tied in here. But otherwise, I love it. Great job. And it was so Gomez, you know, just like, I don't know exactly what's going on, but it's wonderful. I love it. You know, it was great the way that they've reacted. And then yesterday I got this from my notes about Wadsworth and how I felt about him. And the guest said, I like Wadsworth too. I don't believe that ending either, meaning he's not Mr. Body. I said, thank you. Yep, Wadsworth isn't bad. Or in some more fitting words, the amount of nope is too damn high. But yeah, I've got a lot of people confessing that even if they knew I was doing something weird with Dark Shadows, they were just like, Wadsworth, well, that's worth it. I was like, oh, I'm so glad I picked him. But I have been in love with him since sixth grade. So the other thing I wanted to discuss with you is what's coming up. Because I liked what we were doing with that last episode with when we were talking about Carolyn. So we got a uproar between Julia and Barnabas, if you remember that. What I was getting from the characters as I was starting to get more and more in tune with channeling them, I discovered there was a very good reason why Barnabas was in love with Josette and would be in love with Maggie, especially as the reincarnation. And it wasn't a sweet young thing deal. It was about...
Well, it's like, I don't know what word you're looking for, but the positive attitude and humor and vibrancy.
Mm-hmm. And that would do what to Colin Wood?
It would change Colin Wood.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So there was more to it, and a lot of people don't analyze what the purpose was, and when I channeled the characters, Barnabas just came out with it as I was putting everything down, and I didn't know myself. I was listening, things would come out, and I was like, yeah, I mean, when you look at Joshua, you know, meow. It's so cool because that's almost like the way he talked and also a meow. And it made a lot of sense. This girl is the one I need, the one I want, but the one I need, and the one we need. Oh, and then we also have the beginning of Willie Loomis coming back. And I don't want to give too much away, but who does he first have a conversation with in this episode? The only conversation. Who is he having the conversation with?
Oh, Wadsworth. Okay, sorry. Yes. I didn't know where we were in the show. I'm like...
The 13th episode.
In my head, I don't know what the episodes are. But yes, Wadsworth and Willie.
So, Wycliffe are trying to bring Willie back because things are starting to get a little better and a little better. When I worked on his character more, I wanted a sheltering harbor because he'd just been through so much. Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. And you remember how I didn't know how to do it. And I was trying to sleep. You know, I was losing all that sleep. And I was getting so little. And we were lying in bed. And it was about 5 in the morning. And I came the idea of how what their first meeting would be like for the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows came to me. And I thought, okay, now I can get to sleep because I figured it out. And I twist and turn, and I can't sleep, which had been happening for so many months. And I got up from bed, and you remember what I told you?
Was this
the Willie and Wadsworth scene.
Yeah, no, I have no idea what you said.
That, I'm sorry, the muse is a harsh mistress.
Oh, I remember you saying that line, but no, I had no memory of what it was you were going down to write when you said that one.
It was the Willie and Wadsworth scene. It had finally came to me, and I had to write it out. And then the next day, you were sitting on the floor of the bedroom, and I read it to you, and you were cracking up, is what I remember when I read you. Because just every single thing that Wadsworth tells Willie, and Willie's just like, no!
Oh, yeah.
No! Go ahead.
Have you even been to Collinwood?
So, yeah, it just gets better and better, and his face is falling with every word. Because he's like, what about this? What about that? No. It's not like that anymore. And poor Willie's just like, what the heck's going on? And then we have Sam and Maggie going on about certain things. Oh, and Lily and Elizabeth confront Mr. You-Know-Who, the ghost of...
Caleb Collins.
Yeah, exactly. It goes pretty weird. And you remember, I didn't get the cheese thing for so long. It just came out. And then Caleb, you know, he's making fun of Lily big time. You remember that it came, and I didn't know why that line came out of Caleb for ages. It just came out because I looked it up. There's Moinster and there's Munster, and they're both cheeses, and one's English and one's French. So when Caleb gets done with the girls, he tells Lily, you take care of her this time, fromage. It's like, because Munster is the French cheese. I didn't know why that happened. Until I was like, wait a second. It's almost like why I didn't know in episode 10 why it was so funny when Roger was just, what is this? Water. But he and I didn't know it was funny until I said, no, wait, It's because he drinks it. Like, he tastes it first, and he has to ask what it is. That's why it was so funny.
Boy, this goes down smooth. What's this?
Oh, and we have another Addams Family thing coming up with Victoria and Morticia. And this is where Morticia starts to get darker as far as knowing about how people work psychologically. And I was really surprised by that. I mentioned it earlier. And that was another thing that I've been trying to express to people possibly listening to this. The whole idea of Victoria being stupid, I don't like it either. And so that's one of the reasons I think it's so cool that she is hanging out with Morticia. You know, Elizabeth, she's a very serious woman already, and she's a very strong woman already. So Lily Munster, looking in retrospect to this, it makes sense, because that kind of lightens Liz up. Whereas Victoria, you know, she is a strong lady, but giving her Morticia to work with helps make that stronger. And that's where I want to go. I want to get to early Victoria Winters and show just how strong she can be. So the Addams Family and Victoria, mainly Morticia and Grandmama. Up. And then Hoffman and Stokes, they meet up and head over to the old house because Hoffman, after having her wild uproar with Barnabas, is worried about him, and it's like, well, I want to consult somebody. I've been working with Stokes to get Willie figured out. Can you drive me over there? Because I don't remember Dr. Hoffman having a car. I remember Stokes having a car, but I don't remember Dr. Hoffman having one. And in this episode, what does she do with that car of Professor Stokes?
Oh, the mad driving?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Like I said, I told people on one of the news groups on Yahoo, she's the big hero for this one, but for a different reason than one might at first suppose. And the climactic ending came from the background music. I was listening on my way to work to a instrumental track that I knew really well, and for some reason I had to listen to it, and the scene just came to me, and I was writing it at the bus stop on the way to work. I kept it in my head, and I got off of work. I was sitting at the bus stop, and I was just writing it. I think even the paper is still here. Here it is. It's right here. It's the one that I used on the bus. And then I came. You got home, and I read it to you, and I said, check this out. And I finally, you groaned at this when I read it to you with the music playing. I finally got that Dr. Bones McCoy line out of Dr. Hoffman.
Oh, yeah.
And I looked over at you and you were like, it was so good. I was finally a woman. I got that line out of you. It was so good. Been wanting to do that for ages. And why shouldn't anyone worry about Julia when we get to the end? Because she's standing with who?
Professor Stokes.
Thank you. That was one of the things that Helena was like, oh, no! And I was like, oh, come on, just... And then by 14, she finally got it. And I was like, oh. And I only had her reviewing. I thought she was going to have a heart attack. And she got it. And she was like, hey, not a bad idea. And I was like, just about dropped my head on the desk. Thank God. Because I only had her and I did not want to alienate her. And I had no idea. Just I didn't have those perspectives. And that's another reason why 5 perspectives would be really good. 5, hopefully, constructive praise perspectives would be good, and people looking forward to things. Now, 25, I'm going to motor, but 5 would help per episode. It really would.
25 would be crazy.
25
would
be crazy.
Then you'd have all
crazy.
These people wanting different things.
Well, no, it's not about wanting different things, because I can get work from the other helpers and the other writers and the fan pages for that.
Oh, I know. I just mean, well, okay, no.
Yeah, well, so I know, I've already got...
saying, oh, we should have this, or we should have this.
Yeah, I know. And that's not helpful. No, just tell me what you like, that's helpful. Or what you're looking forward to, that's helpful.
I like chocolate chip cookies. Can you incorporate chocolate chip cookies?
Well, O'Shane made a pretty good point about Randall and Hopkirk deceased. Now, when O'Shane brought that to my attention, I said, okay, so what I need to know is... what storyline could they help with, and how would they get to Collinwood or have the characters get to them? And she said, hey, that's a good question. And that's where, when people throw ideas, it's not helpful because there's nothing binding the Dark Shadows storyline to those other fandoms. That's why when O'Sheen said that, it's like, you know, it's 60s, it's British, I understand, cool, but... And then she said, hey, you know, I'm going to have to think about that.
And yeah, it's like, I don't know anything about the show. please give it advice. How
right.
would this work?
And it's already a thing where I said, okay, I've got this one, and this one coming up, so if I find it applicable, I'll get to it, but if you want to add it, I got to get some help. So that's why I say, if you tell me what you like and what you're looking forward to, that's going to boost me so much more. Because I do want to go through the Jennings period, the 1897 period, get to the Leviathans, and then start bringing it into something that resembles 200 years away or a martyr, so set to pray. And that is what we have coming up. And if anybody is bummed out that every one of these interviews ends with a kiss, then you let me know. But I think a lot of the people that I'm relieving are quite romantic and don't mind that. So thank you, my sweet.
You're welcome.
A pleasure as always.
Thank you. It is.
Ah, yes. I know many of you are pretty groovy with hearing from my chap. Now, on to the wrap-up. You know, I thought having to deal with the Julia Barnabas fans was bad enough. But now we have some Angelique Barnabas fans coming out of the woodwork, and I must say, wow. You know, if you want Angelique Barnabas stories, there are plenty of those as well. Just got a review for Margaret Chaussette Dupre that told me Barnabas only really loved Angelique. Well, you have your stories as to what the guy was thinking or who he loved. It's been done. Apparently, no one has told about this story, and I really don't know what the plans were for the 1991 revival series. But there was Josette, as always. And with the 2012 film, there was Josette again. Like I say, if you want stories of other pairings, they're out there. A lot of them. I was combing for this one, and not just for Josette Barnabas, or the reincarnation of Josette and Barnabas, but everyone getting stuff worked out, which means everyone gets a sweetie. I say, if you don't like or enjoy what I'm doing, turn it off. That's your choice. I'm only posting it to fan pages to find my people. I really do not care if you don't like the pairings happening in this Dark Shadows multi-fandom series. Taking Wadsworth at base value that does not incorporate the third ending of Clue, which was mixed in the theatrical release, and was not claimed to be the way it really happened until it was released on VHS, why would Wadsworth step in to help Barnabas find anyone else? Wadsworth lost his wife because she committed suicide due to Mr. Body blackmailing them. That is how the two endings work out. Which is what I'm going with, because in the third one he died, so he wouldn't even be here. So, with the suicide of his wife, he would understand Barnabas's love life from that perspective. The main thing here? I am working very hard, and have spent thousands of dollars on this series to see a version where everyone works it all out, and are more subdued. That's the world I want to see, and I want to find others who want that world. As well as knowing what jokes caught them. But isn't it interesting that the people who spend the most money and work the hardest see Barnabas' love for Josette as something more? And as in this episode coming up, it's not an SYT desire. It's not a sweet young thing. He was looking for something more. Neither Julia nor Angelique were going to give him that. And considering the trolling I've gotten, this is very likely the proof as to why this version of the story was never told before. There are a few vocal people out there that believe they can call the shots with someone else's work. Well, I've been through the ringer with pulleys, as I've said. And no, as far as this series is concerned, you can't call the shots. It's about preference. And as I have said repeatedly, I'm in this to find my people, not popularity. However, I am finding popularity if you look over the download numbers. I have been approached by people who come in and want to control what I'm doing. Well, there is a lot on fanfiction.net that you can read if that is what you want. But as for my talents, I'm going to do whatever the heck I want with them. And I'm not going to be dissuaded by cliques and bossy people. It's a first world problem. Some of the bullies don't know they're bullies. They think they're being helpful. Well, I've specified what will help me repeatedly in my intros. Some folks are providing that, for which I'm very grateful. However, making assumptions about accuracy in heated ways is hardly helpful. Making decisions for other people above anything else is not helpful. If you want to help someone, you ask them what they need. You don't make assumptions about it, especially without gathering all of the data. Helping people is not coming in with a big smile at first, then dictating what they should be doing. I've seen that several times, and it's crazy-making. If you have that much time on your hands, you could be volunteering at a homeless shelter, a soup kitchen, work with abused animals, donate your time in some other way that might require that managing skill you have. There are a lot of people out there who want your time and your efforts. And if you want to spend your time on something important, I say do that. Or you could volunteer at a voter registration place, or you could, there's just so many things that you could be doing other than bugging me. That's why I say it's a first world problem. You got a lot of options of what to be spending your time doing. I'm doing this because it's my calling. And I think your calling has to be a lot more profound than bothering this writer, actor, comedian about who Barnabas Collins loves. Seriously. It's entertainment. And you have a choice on that. And I've lived through the cliques and the bossy people and the bullies for almost 40 years. And I choose to make those people absent from my life, including many family members. But there are people out there who love the characters, want to see a world in which they're getting along a lot better, and hear them sharing more jokes together about life so that we can laugh with them rather than at them. I'm doing my best to provide an entertaining and thought-provoking journey we can share together, where all the pieces start falling into place. And with all of these other fandoms involved, it isn't only about fun or spooky, but about community building and problem solving. Not about fighting over the character's attractiveness, over who should go with whom. It's what's inside that counts. So if you don't like it, close the window, turn off the audio, or make one of your own. And as to my loyal fan base who listened to Barnabas go on about this lady like he was about to burst into song, moaning and groaning about her. Well, here is something I told John Mountain last year. With my writing, performing, humor, and all the hard work with the sound effects and music, I think my purpose is clear. For Barnabas Collins, his love life, his family, and all the love lives in his family. I do. With my writing, my words, my acting, my voice, I whisper in rage. Palaces, never to the morning, left no way, I left all. We'll be right back.
What is it, Willie?
I can't do it, Barnabas. I can't leave. Not now. Not the way things are. Roxanne, she'll just have to adjust, that's all. It's tough for me, Barnabas. But I've come back.